This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined today by the entire Orange Bloods gang, Alex, Anwar, Dustin, Jason. We're like the Mouseketeers. We are all here. Texas spring practice is underway, so there's stuff to talk about today. Fellas, greetings. It's a beautiful day in Austin. Like, this is one of these days I feel like this is why we live here, and it's pretty cool to have some football, because I have found myself on where, I don't know about you or Jason or anybody else for that matter, I need the football this month. I have found myself in February wondering, what the hell have I not talked about in a column with this football team? I hit a little bit of a creative dry place, and football just kind of reinvigorates all that stuff.
It definitely helps. I mean, it definitely helps to for the conversation ass point. I mean, like, the standpoint.
Because you used your quarterback column on Sunday, so that's gone. That's been used.
I'll use it sometime again in like May or June when we're in the dog days, and and then it's just like, what are you going to write about? I guess we'll do the quarterback. I mean, so yeah, it's definitely good to have some stuff, and I enjoyed, as I was taking care of some business on Monday, just reading Alex's report and Dustin and seeing Jason's, the photo, that stuff that he puts together. So definitely good to have some football, at least some real football to talk about.
Let me throw this out to everybody as a starting point for us today. And Dustin, I'll come to you first. It's Thursday. Spring ball started on Monday. So not necessarily 3 days in, as we do this podcast, the thing about the spring so far, and we just go around the room, the thing that in 3 days in you're thinking about the most, that stood out the most, like, is it as simple as your lead on Wednesday, or is it slightly different?
No, I think it's that simple. Whenever you have a coach that's entering his third year and he's, you know, in spring practice and he's saying that the culture is established, I think that that's very noteworthy, especially because he didn't really hide around the idea that they do have a lot of, you know, holes to fill from guys that have moved on, especially on the defensive side of the football. I mean, I thought that he pointed to the areas I think that we've all pointed to along in the defensive line, the linebacker, just finding that front seven, and then finding those best five offensive linemen. But I found it noteworthy that we've graduated from the part of the program development where it's about developing the culture and getting that established and getting guys to believe in it. And we're now at the point where they feel like they've got that established.
Dustin, is it as simple as kind of leaning back on what you wrote about yesterday? Or when you think about this team 3 days in, is there something today slightly different?
No, I think it's that simple. And, you know, whenever you have a head coach that's entering his third year in the spring football phase and he's discussing the culture being established, I think that that's a very noteworthy thing, because we've graduated from the part of the program building to where you've got a coach talking about establishing the culture and getting guys to believe and all, you know, how to practice and all of those things. And instead, we're at the point where you've got a guy saying, okay, we've got this thing established. We've got the culture established. We've got a collective belief among the players that we feel like we as coaches have transferred to them, and they understand. And now they can talk about, okay, we've got to replace this guy. We've got to replace Chris Nelson. We've got to replace Charles Minnehue. We've got to replace Gary Johnson. But instead of talking about, we don't have a culture in place to help us replace those guys, it's more along the lines of, we've got all of these young guys. They're just not used to being in that role yet. And that's an important part of spring football for us, speaking as Tom Herman, is getting those guys acclimated to being in those roles, getting those guys used to being with the ones or with the twos or having more of a voice and things like that. But I found it very interesting that, you know, with 2 years behind him, he feels like this culture is established, and rightly so. I mean, they made progress in year one, especially with the way that the year ended with the bowl win. I think that really helped the belief aspect for everybody. And then year two, you take another big step in the right direction, get to the Big 12 championship game and then win in the Sugar Bowl. So this thing is established from a culture standpoint. I know a lot of fans hear that word and you know, establishing the culture, kind of roll their eyes because so many coaches talk about it in all sports. But it is truly important. You know, you just look at a lot of the successful programs, and they get that thing established. And you know it's established, and this is something that Herman said on Monday, you know it's established when the players are doing a lot of the correcting or the talking or the teaching. You know, Herman says he does less running around now because if somebody does something that isn't right, he's got players that are correcting players and that sort of thing. And I think that's a great sign about the health of the program. And it helps when you have all of these guys to replace, most notably on defense. I mean, that front seven he mentioned specifically, a lot of holes replaced there. But when you have those holes to replace and you've got that culture in place and established, it really helps usher those young, talented guys into their new roles.
Alex?
I'm actually trying to write right now, just like a quick write-up, something I thought about, just with the way that the team looked on the, you know, and you said we're 3 days into this, but we've only really had two practices and only one practice that was open to us. We'll get an open practice again tomorrow, and you can follow along for those write-ups that we'll have from that over at orangebloods.com. But I just started kind of thinking about it, and then just now sort of started writing about it. Because when we went out there, there was all kinds of, you know, Colin Johnson wasn't out there, right? Devin Duvernay wasn't out there. John Burt, another dude who wasn't out there on the defensive side of the football. You have Brandon Jones, who's missing the rest of spring with an ankle? Was it an ankle he's getting surgery on? Something. He's going to miss spring ankle. Football. And you also had guys like Keandre Coburn, who along the defensive line should factor in. There's an issue he's having internally with like a kidney or something. So I just started thinking to myself, well, as we start to reassemble things with everybody back healthy and as we're projecting this deal moving forward just for spring football, what positions are in flux? What positional battles do we really have to look at now that we don't have this huge narrative and storyline this spring, which is has been the quarterback position? That's been the plague of this program for the last, what, half decade? I mean, going back, when's the last time we didn't have a quarterback controversy in spring? I think, Ketchum, that's something you and Anwar both kind of – Anwar, I believe, covered this in his latest Sunday pulpit column over at OB. And to me, it's like – it's kind of interesting just sort of going through the roster based on the personnel sets that we saw during the first day of practice and just identifying spots where there are starters that could potentially be usurped through spring ball by younger players or players behind them on the depth chart. And it's been to the, so far, I'm only, barely through the offense, but it feels like there are definitely a couple spots where there are some players who could pop up and emerge into real difference makers, at least during this spring football period, due to a lack of depth, at least for right now, because clearly Texas is going to be getting a huge injection of talent and depth with this new 2019 class hitting campus during the summer. But, a couple of these guys, have big opportunities. The first that comes right up to the top of my head would be like Jordan Whittington, who, when you look out there at him among that running backs group, I mean, would it really surprise anybody that much to see Jordan Whittington come out of spring football looking like the big stud of that group, even over Keontae Ingram? I mean, after seeing him in pads along with the rest of those guys, I certainly wouldn't. That's a big opportunity. That's a very, very interesting thing to monitor as far as, folks interested in this program. When you look at the safety position with no Brandon Jones, we saw it started out being Chris Brown back there with the first group next to Caden Stearns. How much can DeMarvion Overshown push to maybe work his way into at least that starting group with the spring and get him some reps there? So a couple spots that are just super interesting. It's just so when I think about the defensive line, as much as Ketch has been complaining about, the lack of perceived depth there and what we're going to be able to do to kind of wrap our heads around how this defense is going to be anywhere near as good as last season, when we consider that, it's like when you look at that starting group, Gerald Wilbon, Malcolm Roach, and Taquan Graham, I don't know how that group is really going to get improved upon through all of spring football. So, you know, it's kind of hard for me to see any of those guys taking over, any of those depth guys taking over jobs outright from any of those three players. So maybe Ketch is right, and there is a little bit of a concern along the defensive line. But just for me, it's been an interesting exercise going through and identifying where there could be shakeups personnel-wise, because it definitely is a different-looking group, especially on the defensive side of the football, than last year. But when you really dig in, there aren't that many options, at least for the springtime, that are going to just come in and you know, project to immediately sort of turn that thing around.
Dustin, who I already went to. Sorry, that was so long ago that I forgot that I went to you first. Jason!
Hey, I'll get around eventually. Yeah,
the Musketeer thing is not easy. Like, you just forget who already announced their name. Sorry, go ahead.
Just scribble notes as we're talking. You know, mine's pretty short and sweet. I'll keep it. And Alex touched on a little bit. I'm intrigued. I don't have a lot of questions about this team. I mean, maybe it's because the quarterback play is so settled and that's so unique for us. But I'm most intrigued kind of coming out of that. You know, obviously Casey Thompson, you want to see how he does. But I'm really fascinated by the true freshman. And Alex touched on it a little bit. You got Jordan Whittington, who, you know, the little bit we got to see on Monday was second, third team, you know, getting, but legitimately on the depth chart already. I mean, first snap of first practice of spring ball. And like Alex, and, you know, I'm not expecting Jordan Whittington to claim the top spot necessarily, but I'll be shocked. I actually talked to Mike Farrell called me yesterday. Everybody, Orange Blood's favorite, Mike Farrell called me, and we were talking about true freshmen and who could make an impact. And he was talking about DeGabriel Floyd for a column that he's going to write. I'm assuming it might even come out today. And I said, dude, you really should be focused on Jordan Whittington. And I mean, based off of what we saw from the first practice, I don't have any doubts that he's going to be heavily involved in their offensive game plan. I mean, it's great. I mean, I'm the guy who always says, oh, slow down, man. It's one practice, but they threw him right into the mix. You know, I'm excited to see what he can do at that running back position and how quickly he can ascend the depth chart, because he's in the mix already. So you got Jordan Whittington, you got Brew McCoy, getting a lot of work early. And some of that's due to your wide receivers being injured, you know, guys like Duvernay and Colin Johnson being out, I'm sure. But again, I mean, Brew McCoy and Tom Herman said on Monday, said, hey, we are preparing him as if he is going to be available to play in 2019. Well, you know, he was getting second team reps, and I think he might have even got some first team reps in the early portion of practice, and they were doing some kind of walkthrough stuff. So to me, that's kind of fascinating that two of these true freshmen early enrollees are just being thrown right into the mix. And, you know, I'm kind of curious. I'm excited to see what those guys can do over the next month. I think both those guys are going to be, assuming Brew gets cleared to play, of course, I think both those guys are going to be integral parts of the Texas offense in 2019. And it's pretty interesting to watch, see how those guys develop.
Anwar.
Well, you know, when you go last, you got to take the crumbs.
I'm going last.
Last. You usually transition, but
you're
going to
take mine. I know. Well, you're going to take mine.
As long as here's the good thing. I haven't started working on my war room yet, so we have no worries.
Yeah.
I'll go big picture perspective, and I'll get into a couple of little things. From a big picture perspective, what's really intriguing about this spring is that there actually is a lot of interest in this spring. Like, there's interest in this club, people wanting to know what's going on. I think there's more interest from the reporters who are covering the team. And it's not just a job, but there's interest there. You're coming off a 10-win season, a Sugar Bowl victory, great at recruiting. So just having that momentum in the spring, I think, is intriguing, because I've never experienced that since I've been here. You guys always mentioned some of the guys that I would have mentioned. I've heard, you know, from the people I've talked to, Brew McCoy, I've obviously just a beast, not only on the field, but behind the scenes, hearing great things, you know, about him. Of course, Jordan Whittington, I reported on that months ago. They was going to be at the running back position. So nothing really new there. We'll still see what happens when Jake Smith arise, but from a big picture perspective, knowing that you've got the Brew McCoys, you've got the, you know, Jake Smith. I heard people talking about Joshua Moore this week. Sam Ehlinger was talking about that on Wednesday, about just the speed that they, that's out there, and getting used to and adjusted and trying to get that timing down with a guy who's as fast as Joshua Moore, and working with, and of course, having these, all these guys who are fast, and the guys now talking more so about having plays over 50 yards, I feel vindicated, right? Because I felt like I was alone. But Ketch, you know, that's been my soapbox for a long time. And you know,
it
now
came up again yesterday.
Yeah, it really is. I really feel like a pioneer in this conversation, to be honest.
Or you started it. I blame you, actually.
Well, I feel vindicated. It's not, I won't say pioneer, but I feel vindicated because it now is a talking point amongst guys. And it's not,
but it's a weird one because it's like arbitrary. You picked, like, 50 is the number because they had plays more than 40, right? Yeah. I mean, because if they didn't have a play more than 40, then it wouldn't be 50; it would be 40.
Sure.
But look, you've gotten Herman now to talk about this on multiple occasions without your probing, so it's in his head. Like, I think you are not only the pioneer of this; I think it's in people's heads now.
Maybe. I mean, but it needs to be. And it's a conversation, but it's a conversation. Again, I don't have all the stats in front of me, but when you look at other, when Herbert could quote it and say, hey, we're one of the only two teams in the country that didn't have a play over 50 yards, like, it kind of is a thing. And then the last things that I'll just, you know, say is, and I'm surprised Alex didn't mention this. I'm also intrigued about the offensive line, you know, hearing again, Sam Ehlinger praise Denzel Okafor and Tope Amadi. And it's interesting when the conversation of Okafor about, I want to say about 2 years ago, I was talking to a source and that person told me they believe that Denzel Okafor could be a guy that could develop into an NFL player at some point. Not saying that he would be drafted or the first round, anything like that, but they felt like he had that potential to become an NFL player at some point. So now seeing him kind of get that opportunity and get that run and seeing what he may or may not progress into, definitely intrigued to watch that.
You didn't steal mine, but Alex briefly touched on it. Guys, I have to look. So the Keandre Coburn thing to me is impossible for me to just move away from, because if Tom Herman's words on Monday about this situation are right, he has like some abnormal situation ongoing with his kidneys that have occurred a couple of times in the last 7 months. And so they've shelved him until they figure out what this issue is. And they've done a biopsy, and Herman was like, hey, it's all cool. But he also said they don't know what's wrong yet. Like, they're still trying to diagnose what it is that's bothering him. And it may be that they think, look, something's up, but it's not. If it was a big thing, we would have discovered it. It's maybe this little thing that we have to figure out. Maybe there's a certain type of medicine or whatever. But, like, that's alarming. Anytime I start hearing internal organs, biopsies, and don't know what's wrong, even if you're putting a smiling face on it. And that little thing just made me start thinking about the defensive line. And Alex, you know, I sent this in Slack yesterday. The Texas defensive line, as it currently stands with Malcolm Roach, with Gerald Wilbon, and with Taquan Graham, they combine as a returning unit with 3.5 tackles for loss combined for an entire season a year ago. So when we talked about, you know, them losing Puna Ford and some of the turnover that they had a year ago, up front, they did bring back Omenihu. They did bring back Brecken Hager. They did bring back Chris Nelson, who's kind of a poor man's Puna Ford. And they brought back production on that side of the ball, especially Omenihu. It's impossible not to look at this defensive line. And I mean, they don't have one guy that if they went into a game tomorrow that you knew for sure – that guy's going to get to the quarterback. That guy's going to be their playmaker. For me, we all have known this. We've all known that this turnover exists. But kind of what Alex was touching on, I think, you know, now that it's back on the field and now that you're looking at backup guys and wondering how do they get better, now they've lost Coburn for, you know, who knows? Maybe it's a week. Maybe it's all of spring. Maybe he's back by the fall. Maybe he's back by April. I don't know. But losing just one guy who is going to be in that mix, I think, for competing for a starting spot, I think really stresses home the point that for years we've been talking about the lack of defensive line recruiting and how it was a problem under Charlie. It was a problem in the beginning under Herman, just getting these big time dynamic guys to come in. And Texas is very thin now with proven talent. And as Alex alluded to, there's not necessarily guys behind them that you're like, oh yeah, that guy's a redshirt freshman. And Coburn's one of those guys, but I don't know. Like, this is, for me, with LSU being the second game on the schedule, that defensive line getting up to snuff as quickly as possible is easily, for me, the number one thing I'm thinking about 3 days in. And it'll be on my mind throughout the rest of this spring going in through the offseason, the progress that those guys make. Because Anwar, look, man, Malcolm Roach is a guy that seems like a bit of a tweener. I thought he had a chance to be sophomore Big 12 player of the year coming off that freshman year when he looked so dynamic. Since he's been under Orlando, he's a linebacker, he's a defensive line, he's somewhere in between, but not really playing a ton. Wilbon's okay. Like, he's an okay player. He'll be okay. And when I look at Graham, a guy that people are raving about in the offseason, outside of a play here or there a year ago, you barely knew he was on the field. And Marquez Bimage would be the other guy at end with a little bit of experience, but he played in 9 games last year. He didn't really do anything either. Like, that group, those defensive coaches, I mean, that's a real area of concern, and they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I mean, I know Texas is known for, you know, DBU, but, I mean, over the past couple of years, it's what would defensive line you? Are we going to go DLU? I mean, you look at – you've had Puna Ford – be the defensive player of the conference, at least Big 12 defensive player. Then you had Charles Amenihue last year, kind of claimed that award.
Malcolm Brown the year before.
Malcolm, thank you. For that, like you said, Chris Nelson was good at that position. So now all of a sudden you're like, what's left? You know, what's there? This is an Oscar Giles production at this point. You know, the one thing you can say is at least that Oscar has been able to get some production out of his guys. So, but this is where Oscar earns the money, right? This is what he's got to do, because I'm with you. There are question marks at that position. Yeah, there's a lot of guys who you feel like can do it, but you know, we just look at that front seven overall, Kedge, that when you look at the front seven and the lack of a real experience, even no matter what, you know, I hear Joseph Asai is going to be a beast, and I hear great things about him, but you know, you still got it. We've heard that for years. We hear about guys are going to do certain things, and then sometimes it does or doesn't pan out. So definitely a lot of question marks on the defensive line. It'll be interesting to see how they progress throughout the spring.
Guys, I'm curious. If anybody wants to answer, well, I'd love to know everybody's answer. The guy on the defensive line, and Alex, I'll go to you first. The guy on the defensive line right now that you feel the best about, that when, you know, when the lights come on in September, they'll not just be okay, but they'll be a guy this Texas defensive line can hang its hat on.
I don't feel that confident about any of them. Okay. Malcolm Roach has been miserable with his hand in the dirt. He needs to play outside linebacker, but it's just not like, as Anwar said, they love Joseph Asai, and it's not the type of outside linebacker that Todd Orlando likes. You know, he's like Malcolm Brown is, he's been 3-4 into a defensive end, and that's just, or sorry, Malcolm Roach. That's just how we're gonna have to deal with him. So you know, you worry about him. Gerald Wilbon, that guy's got – I mean, he's got a good anchor on him, but I think we've still yet to see the disruptive capabilities out of him that we've even started to see flashes of out of the Chris Nelsons and the Puna Fords, you know, coming into this time in their career at Texas. I mean, now's the time for Gerald Wilbon to turn it on. Will he do it? We have not seen the flashes yet that we've seen out of the other guys that we were really hoping to see. And then I guess it would be Taquan Graham. He came on to – I was super impressed with him as a true freshman. He began to come on a little bit towards the end of last season. With that being said, he simply has not been productive at all on a per-snap basis thus far in his career at Texas. I think I could actually pull it up right now and just look at his snaps per production cause from last year. But he was not even in the top – I know he wasn't even top 15. And just to, you know, to say that a guy played along the defensive line and wasn't even top 15 in the snaps per disruption caused is very, very, that's a, you know, you would expect that out of like a nickel, you know, like a nickel corner or, you know, somebody like that. It's not something, anything you would ever expect from a guy that plays a defensive end in this 3-4. I'm looking at it right now. Taequann Graham played 258 snaps last year. Actually was dead last on the team in snaps per production caused, 24.7 snaps per production caused. And that's on 258 snaps. I mean, that was twice as productive. That was two times less productive than Gerald Wilbon, Marquez Bimage, Moro Ojomo. I mean, only on a 13-snap sample from last year was it 13 snaps per disruption caused. So it's – and for let's Keandre Coburn, just for comparison, once again, on a very small sample, only 11 snaps, but 3.67 snaps per production caused. Joseph Osai, mentioned by Anwar earlier, another guy, 5.81 snaps per production caused on 61 snaps. So we're looking at a guy who, Taequann Graham, no production except for every 25 snaps. That, I mean, he needs to pick it up. And one of, the fact that I'm talking about him as the guy who I might be most confident in, now I'm kind of talking myself out of it. Maybe I should just be most confident in the kind of the steadiness of Gerald Wilbon and the fact that he's big and I think he could set a good anchor in the middle. It's a worrisome group. And like I talked about earlier, it's not like there's really that many dudes underneath him who are going to step up. And, you know, I mean, Marquez Bimage at defensive end, maybe to take overtaking Roach. Well, that's fine. But you're going to run into some of the same issues with that guy. He's a little bit undersized, and he's also in a green no contact jersey. I don't know how long that's going to take him to shed that deal. I honestly, man, if he can get back healthy, as crazy as it is, the guy who I'm most confident in making a big difference would be Keandre Coburn. When you just look at his size, when you look at the way he looks compared to the others, the way he, the way that he can be absolutely dominant in practice versus good players. We saw it last season, even at the beginning of the year, when he was just a wet behind the ears, brand new freshman, you know, right out of high school. If this kidney thing is going to be okay, I almost look at him just from a pure athletic profile and just from what we've been able to see and just from a pure size perspective is maybe the dude that I feel most confident in, which is scary.
I'm right there. I'm right there with you. Like, that's why Monday, Jason, for me was such a like eye opener, because I am right there with Alex. I think that if all things are being equal and I could buy stock in one of these defensive linemen on the roster going into the season, I'm probably buying Coburn stock. And, you know, it is alarming that, you know, he's shelved at the moment.
Well, it's alarming for the depth chart, but you know, Tom, well, exactly. And I wrote, you know, in my column on Wednesday, I wrote about that, or Tuesday rather, Tuesday, I wrote about that. You know, I mean, you worry about his health. He was kind of, you know, the information we got from Tom Herman on Monday was rather vague, but the fact that, like you said, Ketch, it's this kidney issue's come up twice. Boy, that's just alarming, man. I mean, you worry about his health first and foremost, and you hope he's fine. But the thing that I just keeps running through my mind as Alex is talking and everyone is talking is, well, Keandre Coburn, it's not, you know, it's not just a coincidence. He is the, I mean, think of those guys we're talking about on the defensive line and you know, Taequann Graham and even Malcolm Roach and Gerald Wilbon. None of those guys were elite level recruits. I mean, you can argue that Coburn was kind of on the fringe of that level, but I mean, bottom line, I mean, Texas, this is becoming a pattern for Texas along the defensive line. Yes, they've had the player of the year the last couple of years, and that's great, but they've got to do a better job. Oscar Giles has to do a better job of making it where this isn't a conversation every year about defensive line depth and overall talent along the defensive line. They've got to do a better job recruiting. I mean, those guys we're talking about were, most of them were, you know, three-star type talents. I mean, at what point is, you know, Texas going to start reeling in high level, high four-star, even five-star level defensive line talent where this isn't a conversation it seems like every year we're just having this same conversation about kind of lack of depth, lack of just top end defensive line talent. I mean, as you guys are talking it out, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, but that's what kind of just stands out in my mind is, well, should we be, are we surprised by this? I mean, that they don't have a true go-to dominant lineman, defensive lineman on this team. I mean, look at the way they've recruited that position group over the last few years. And we should have seen this coming. All that being said, you know, I actually wrote about it on Tuesday. I said, I'm not as worried as I'm kind of surprised at myself that I'm not quite as worried as maybe I should have been. And I think some of that is because, like you, Ketch, and you were a big Malcolm Roach fan as a freshman, and I kind of lean back in that direction. I'm expecting Malcolm Roach to have a kind of a breakout breakout season this year and to be the leader of that groom, that group. I think Moro Ojomo has a chance to be fantastic. I think that group's going to be okay, but you know, it sure would be nice for Texas fans to go into a spring, a fall camp, not having to rely on some blind faith. I mean, they've got to do a better job of bringing in top shelf talent along the defensive line.
Anwar, you're last again, I think, on this. So apologies.
Man, I'm so last. I don't even know what the question is.
We can move on. Let's do this. Well, we were just talking about that defensive line, and I think we've
And he wasn't even last.
I actually talked about the defensive line already, I thought.
Right, but we were circling back but around.
I talked about Puna and Chris Nelson. And
we're doing like a figure eight coming back to you, man. It's a circle. Whatever the hell you want to call it.
Well, I don't want to – as I was listening, though, I found myself going, God, everybody's going to accuse us of being, you know, just like too negative. And I think that, so as I'm looking at the clock and realizing this may be a shorter version of the Ticket City podcast than we normally do, I do want to focus on the positives that I think stick out 3 days into camp. And I just think more than anything, in Texas, even under Charlie, you know, there was 1 year out of the last five recruiting classes where they didn't have a nationally elite recruiting class, at least at a top 10 level, right? I mean, Charlie had a couple. Then there was the clunker in the final year that Herman had to pick up and kind of salvage. But Herman's last 2 years have been top five classes. And there is a lot of talent on this team. I think about the wide receiver position where essentially all three guys that were – 90% of the receiving workload a year ago are out for the spring. And I think normally you would think, well, the passing game's going to dip and, you know, that's going to be a problem as the offense tries to work it out. And instead it's like, ooh, Texas gets to play with all of its toys. And there's a lot of that. I think it's the kind of thing that we give. I think we think about it in the secondary and we think all those guys are going to be all right because a lot of them played a year ago, but even the Anthony Cooks and even the Jalen Greens of the world, I think there's an excitement to see those guys on the field. You think about the linebackers, you know, Anwar mentioned Joseph Asai and you saw in glimpses at the very end of the season, like, oh, that guy's going to be really good. And I just feel like with the possible exception of the defensive line, every other position on the field, I feel like there's a lot of reason for genuine excitement about the young players that are about to come onto the scene. And if Coburn were healthy, I think he would be in that mix as well. The defensive line just doesn't have that in depth, as we've established. But, man, everywhere else, like, I want to buy a ticket and watch these dudes practice.
I mean, I would tend to agree with you, Ketch. And, you know, I'll touch on something that Alex had
mentioned. I would pay hundreds of dollars for tickets to watch these dudes practice. If Bianco could set that up, I would literally pay hundreds of dollars.
I don't think they're in the business of taking money.
This is not the time for bribes.
It's bad timing. Because if you had worked this out, Alex, a week ago, yeah. I think Bianco might take your bribe. Someone would take your bribe. I would, but now
hundreds of dollars just for the week. just for the ability to just for the ability to drop exclusive in-depth nuggets all over the board all the time live from practice. Could you imagine what great content we would have if that level of coverage were available to us and the type of exposure the University of Texas football program would be getting by allowing that sort of access? I just can't even imagine it. What a perfect world that would be.
I was about to say, Jason, if we could only have the kind of access that programs like Florida State, and I was specifically thinking of USC, allow the media to have in covering their programs, but this ain't the week to be compared to USC either.
Yep. Yeah. Is USC still USC? Back in Pete Carroll's day, I mean, dude, Alex, those guys could go out and not just watch practice, they could film
live stream seven on seven.
They could grab Reggie Bush like after a drill and do a quick with them to like just unbelievable.
Well, and catch, Florida State too, like Bobby Bowden, Bobby Bowden wanted to see all of the reps. He wanted War Chant to record all of that stuff.
And did it really hurt those programs? No, it didn't. It's just the secrecy. We're getting way off path, but the secrecy and the need for secrecy drives me effing crazy. Okay, so what you said, Ketch, I've said this to college coaches before. I said, doesn't it benefit you if I go out to their 7-on-7 workouts, if they do 7-on-7 workouts,
which is a non-sanctioned workout that,
I record it and put it on YouTube where you can then watch it, isn't that benefiting you? I mean, you coaches, back before I started with Orange Bloods, I was with Horns Illustrated, Ketch. I remember you and I would be, that's when spring practice, every single practice was completely open. It was me, you, and about five others, fans, not even media members. We would be at every spring practice. I remember sitting on these.
Me, you, Robert, and Katie.
Yes, that's exactly who it was. It was Robert and Katie, yeah, and then like maybe one other. But every single practice we got to go to, Alex, you would long for those days, man. Those are the good old days when you could go. You know what? It didn't hurt the program back then either. I don't know, man. I'm getting on a soapbox, but the need for secrecy and just having to control every little piece of information just drives me crazy, man.
Hell, Colt McCoy, he's the one that snitched on us.
He did kind of that little slide.
Because Bianco never had a problem. Like, the only national championship team of what, the last 40, 50 years had open practices in the summer that were well documented. I used to go out there and stand next to Bianco during those deals. And then the very next year, Colt McCoy snitched on us, and it was just the thing that John Bianco needed. No offense to John, but like, he's the guy in charge of this thing.
And frankly, they can't prevent us from showing up. I mean,
rule is, hey, you can go out and record all the 7-on-7 workouts that you want. You just will no longer be a credentialed media member.
Yep. There's other areas they can hit you. Yeah.
Yeah. They're very good at using their leverage. That's the best thing.
I would love to just sit down with Tom Herman and be like, dude, can't this work for your favor too? I mean, you're getting to watch workouts that you're otherwise not permitted to watch in person. You know, see who's standing out, see who's showing up, see who's working hard, see who's running.
See what agents are showing up and potentially bothering the player.
I'm not going to that, but yeah, I don't know. But anyway,
background? Who's that talking?
Yeah, how the hell we got on this subject? I don't know. But there's my rant.
He was willing to pay hundreds of dollars for practice.
That's I would pay hundreds. Hundreds. I'd pay $1,000 for like a season pass.
I'd pay it $1,000 for your season pass.
Well, I would definitely ask for some help with that because I'm not sure I have $1,000 of the old
bank. You started spending money freely, and I was like, well, that's his $100. Yeah. But now if we're talking about like a season pass, yeah, I'll bankroll you on that for perfect. Sure.
All right. Well, if it ever comes up, I'll hold you to it.
Audemars, or Dustin, or anybody actually, just, you know, back to like the positive things. Like 3 days into camp, Anwar, the thing that's not alarming to you, but exciting or stand outish in terms of like positivity that people can be excited about is what?
I'll still go back to what I wrote on Sunday, though, which is this is the first year, Ketch, that I've been here. Probably the first year for you since Paulie Colt, where we're not talking about that quarterback position in a like, what the hell are they going to do kind of light. Like, it's such a difference where we are at this point 40 minutes into a podcast and we've only like thrown Ellinger's name out here and there, but knowing that he will enter the season as arguably the best quarterback in the Big 12, and that of course means he will be one of the best quarterbacks in the nation by proxy. Like, it's just amazing that we have that not only for this season, but you have that for the next 2 years, and knowing that he is growing and developing into a leader, and he's even talked about wanting to become more of that leader and establish himself, knowing that they have their franchise guy. If you're just looking for something that's positive, I think that's an easy positive aspect for me.
Sam, really? Like, Jason, it might be as simple as that. Like, when your quarterback is that guy that everybody, I think, feels comfortable saying that about with Sam now, he's proved it. Like, he's done it in a lot of big games, and he did it in the most recent big game. That sometimes that's enough.
Yeah, it's like Onward said it. I think we can't take for granted how we're able to cover the quarterback position now, because it's no longer a question. I mean, I guess the only question is just how good of a season is he going to have as a junior at Texas. And I want to go back to the youth thing that a couple of y'all mentioned. I went back and counted based on, just our first look at open practice on Monday. And of course, you've got to factor in that there are some guys that weren't practicing, Devin Duvernay, Colin Johnson, some guys like that are going to definitely be in the mix. But if you were just to look at that Monday practice and count the guys that were running with the ones or the twos, there were 17 guys from the 2018 recruiting class that were running with the ones or the twos. And then if you throw in, Cameron Dicker being the kicker, Ryan Bucheski being, in the punter, and Keandre Coburn, if he gets back to normal with his kidneys and everything, he's definitely going to be in the mix. That's 20 of the remaining 24 guys from that recruiting class that are basically like in the two deep and in a position to where they could potentially play a significant role next season. And a lot of those guys are going to be counted on to be starters. I mean, you look in the secondary with the safeties and the corners, especially, and then the linebackers as well. But I'm excited to see just how good this 2018 class is, because on paper, it looked like a terrific class. So far, it looks like a terrific class. And really, it's kind of like the program's almost being turned over to that recruiting class, because so many of these guys, whether it's in the two deep on the offensive line, or maybe potential starters at defensive line, or potential starters at defensive back and in linebacker, and then guys in the mix of receiver. There's a lot of guys that are in position to really grab a lot of playing time. And I think that's going to be something that's going to be exciting to watch during the spring, because so many of these young second year players are going to be running around all over the place playing for playing time.
Fellas, it is only 3 days into spring workouts, so at the risk of like overdoing opinions 3 days in, let's go into parting shots. Anwar, you've gone last all day long today on parting shots, and it has nothing to do with the fact that your name technically in alphabetical order would be second. I'm going to you as a gift, unless you don't want it.
No, I'd rather go first, because Alex is going to have a rant.
I really don't have a rant today. So I don't have
poke one. And prod.
No one believes that.
Yeah,
I don't. I really
forget
I don't.
The rant. It's Dustin, you should that. Talk. You should not talk. You may be the rant deliverer after last week. So, if not, I'll step up and figure something out. My kids are 5 today, so I could probably rant about a number of things.
Dustin will have a rant after that Kansas game tonight, I'm sure.
Oh, it will take delay.
Oh, that won't be a rant. That'll be 400 words. Turn it in.
You misspelled 40. Onward, you're first. Help us get started wrapping up.
Just want to say, finally closed on a house this week, and so I am now an official Austinite. That means I can be like Alex and complain about everything that Austin people have complained about. I've seen you guys complain about for years, even though technically I'm in Cedar Park, but I'm close enough where I can complain about what California is moving in. And but I don't know why I could complain about that, because it doesn't really help the property tax value. Alex, I don't have land where I can shoot on or work or anything like that, but But unfortunately, I do have an HOA that's going to have way more restrictions than I think should be humanly possible or allowed. But I'm going to learn. I'm going to deal with it. So I'm just happy to be amongst one of you. I closed on Monday. Jason's mother-in-law closed on Monday. Don't live in the same neighborhood. So proud to be an Austinite and be a part of this Texas community, this great Texas community. And by the way, I have Texas stars around the house. And on Sunday, my pulpit, I'm going to post a picture of my son in a – they had Texas Day at his school, and I'm going to post a picture of him in his cowboy outfit. It's going to be really cool.
If this were just a few decades ago, I think Maximus looked like a kid headed for Dallas nightclub one day. Like back in Dallas nightclubs on where you wouldn't know anything about that, but back – Jason would. Back in the day, I think a full-grown Maximus, like in his 20s, based on what I saw on Facebook this week, I think he would have done very well for himself at Dallas. Just saying.
I think he's when he gets older, he's still going to – I think he's going to be running the show. So I think he's going to have his pick of the litter.
Well, there you go. Jason, it just occurred to me, you may be the one with the rant since you had your own house closed. Do you want to wade into that, or are you good for something else?
Not much to say, dude. It was easy, breezy. Mother-in-law closed on a house. She's moving from Oklahoma down to Liberty Hill.
God, what a life upgrade that is.
Well, she's originally from Colorado, long story, but lived in Oklahoma the last 15 years or something, taking care of her mother. Now she's moving down here so we can eventually take care of her. So my wife and I are like, oh, we're so excited to have you moving closer, but we don't know if it's the right. We'll see how that goes over the long run.
Go ahead, Jason, get that rant out.
Oh, no.
Go ahead. You can.
Truth be told, I love my mother-in-law. We get along great, but maybe that's because she lives 5 hours away from us presently too. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if I'm saying the same thing next year. But no, I don't have my closing thought is interesting. Not a lot of recruiting action this week, but the most interesting story is that five-star cornerback Keely Ringo has been in town all week on an unofficial visit. I talked to Keely last night and hated to bug him on his visit, but it's hard not to because he doesn't know when he's going home. Little backstory, his mom's a flight attendant for American Airlines, so he can basically just jump on a flight whenever the hell he wants to. So he decided kind of at the last minute, he flew into Austin. He's been here all week, probably going to be at practice tomorrow. He's not positive, but he's been hanging out with the team, around the players, in coaches' meetings. He went to the practice on Wednesday. This is his third unofficial visit. He told me absolutely 100% Texas will get an official visit from him when he does take his official visits. He's a guy who has always said, and listen, I mean, Keely Ringo, in my perspective, I don't want to say you can make a case. I mean, at the end of this cycle, he might be in the running for a top player in the country. He's that talented, that good of a player, that good of an athlete. But anyways, he's always said, hey, I'm going to take my time. I'm not going to commit until probably very late in the process, maybe early signing period, maybe even February of next year. When I talked to him last night, that's still the plan, but the door is open a little bit to him making potentially an early decision. And boy, three unofficial visits to Texas, including basically a week-long stay. I really like where Texas sits right now with Keely Ringo, one of the top overall players in the entire country. So big visit this week. I'll have more from Keely Ringo in the war room on Thursday night.
Jason, who was the former recruit? Like, I usually remember this stuff really well, and it's on the tip of my tongue.
You don't remember. I sure as hell won't remember, but go ahead.
Wasn't there a prospect that Texas ended up getting because they had the parent who was working for an airline, and they had the ability to kind of fly in, fly out, and, like, it was very convenient? I know there was one. I just can't remember.
There probably is one. We've covered so damn many of them. I'm sure there's one, but I can't think
of... Seemed like there was an out-of-state guy that used to come in and out. Maybe he had someone from Austin who was family.
Well, Gabriel Floyd did it last year, but I don't think that was because of airline connections. But I mean, he was flying in and out all the time. I don't remember if there was
a bunch of those U-list kids have families in the airline industry.
I want to say it was an out-of-state kid. I just can't remember who the hell it was. Alex, how about you?
Yeah, like I said, nothing to really complain about. I guess that
I mean, as I look out my window, I can start to see some of my neighbors, and this has been kind of bothering me. Well, a couple things about my goddamn neighbors that have been, but one thing is this guy across the street that's building a house. He needs to get with the contractor and tell him to throw away his goddamn trash. I mean, I'm getting too. Have you guys ever had construction like right across the street from you? Or
my next door neighbor's house was being built. Like I bought a house.
So, I've got one right now at the end of the corner.
All right.
The amount of trucks there drives me nuts.
Well, it's the trucks, right? It's not just that. It's the weather, like the weatherproofing flapping in the wind, like stuff like. But to dude, honestly, how many goddamn bags of Cheetos and shit do you pick up every day, in your grass? Like, they need to.
It's never happened.
Well, these idiots across from me need to get their stuff together. I've been thinking about going over there and just talking to the foreman and saying, look, dude, like there's too many Monster Energy drinks. You guys eat a bunch of garbage. If you're gonna be putting it in your body, that's fine. But after you're done putting it in your body, put it in the trash can. Right? In my other deal, it has to do with these goddamn blue bonnets. And what a swindle it's been for me, because all of my neighbors have blue bonnets. They're supposed to be naturally occurring in the Texas Hill Country. Last year when I bought the house, I noticed that a bunch of people all around me had blue bonnets. I didn't have any blue bonnets. And so I said, well, how can I get some goddamn blue bonnets? I went up to the feed store where I get my deer feed and some of the stuff to like help maintain my well. And they're really helpful up there about this kind of stuff. How much do you think a 1 pound bag of blue bonnet seed costs? Anybody have any idea?
Well, how big is the bag?
1 pound.
I don't know. I have no idea.
$30.
$85.
Oh, holy shit.
You spend $85. You go up to the feed store. They say, oh, yeah, these are the same seeds we sold Willie Nelson whenever he put all the blue bonnets. Like, you see all the blue bonnets down Bee Creek Row. That's all because Willie spent, he bought 5,000 pounds of seeds back in 1978, blah, blah, blah. These are the best. Take them. These assholes never told me that there's a process that you need to go through to help these seeds germinate in the fall, which is called scarification. And if you don't scarify your seeds to be able to plant them in the perfect time that I had to plant them, perfect soil, right? If you'll prepare them via this process of scarification, which is basically just creating some like nicks and cuts in it, the kind of scratching and nicking the seed's coast to simulate the natural weathering processes. Like if you don't do that, you're not going to get any good blue bonnets. And so sure enough, no blue bonnets for me. Once again, I'm going to have to go back and spend $85. And this time I'm going to tell them, why didn't you fucking tell me last time that they're about the scarification process? Since all you told me about was Willie Nelson, these 5,000 pounds of blue bonnets, how beautiful it is all up and down Bee Creek Road. Whereas you leave out the most important part of the process. And now I'm going to have to walk across the street to my neighbor's yard to take our family bluebonnet pictures.
On eBay, you can buy wholesale bags with 3,500 seeds for $25 in free shipping.
With how many? How much does that weigh?
I don't know. 3,500 seeds, though, sounds like it's got to be close to a pound.
That's a lot of seeds. 3,500 flowers.
Will you send me the link in Slack, please?
Alex, please send him just a link to a box of Cheetos, right, like now. A Cheetos fitness from Amazon.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Just drive out 290, man. There's blue bonnet patches all over the place. Take your
but no, seeds, man.
I'm right here. I'm sitting. It's free shipping, too. Legit. $25 straight cost. Oh, I just said it.
You gotta be careful about those 290 ones, because there's been – I've heard stories of people getting, like, snake encounters.
Snake.
Yeah, well, that's a risk anywhere, dude.
Well, I just am amazed at how parents are so willing to, like, endanger their kids. Like, I don't know. Like,
do it for the gram.
Like, in the middle of the highway. Yeah. On the side of the road.
Exactly.
There's, like, no shoulder. It's like, just buy some fucking pictures from your school. Like,
ever see it off of Anderson Mill? Right where we live?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, people like right at the corner, like you're like, how did? Where'd you park? Like, you don't. There's no even place to park.
There's no shoulder. You just.
Yes.
It's like if some car comes around the corner and isn't paying attention, your kid's five, like 2 feet away from the. That drives me crazy. And the thing is, like, my kids are five and they're twins, and my wife hasn't yet made me do the blue bonnet photo. But I have to feel like it's coming.
Oh, it's coming. It's
good. We did it when my kids were – my first two were super young, but we haven't done it in – probably 12 years. So
probably because it was a big hassle. And afterwards, Kristen said, oh, okay, we don't need to do that again.
Yeah, kids are crying. It's a pain in the ass. Is it really worth it? Yeah, exactly. We'll Photoshop some blue bonnets around them.
Dustin, parting shot. Shaka's Wednesday night or Thursday night game? Or do you want to scratch on last weekend at Stanford or something else?
I really don't have much, to be honest. I stayed up too late messing around with some other podcast stuff, and I'm kind of dragging. I mean, like this basketball season, I'm just dragging. Let's get this thing over with and move on from there. But Texas, I mean, the baseball team does host Texas Tech this weekend in Big 12 play to open up that part of the schedule.
Need a pep in your step. Big 12 play starts in what, a day?
Yeah. And
come on, wake up.
I do need to wake up. I think if you would have said, you've told Texas fans, hey, you're going to finish non-conference play 13-6, I think a vast majority of them would have been very, very happy with that, and rightfully so. I mean, as frustrating for Texas and its fans as the Stanford series was, those games were pretty competitive the first three games, and then Sunday's disaster with the monsoon in the inning, and they didn't stop playing, all those things. But I think they learned a lot through the non-conference schedule. I think they know clearly that defense is going to be what either prevents them from reaching what they're capable of, or if they correct that, really allows them to compete for a Big 12 championship, which if you win the Big 12, history shows you will host a regional. We know how important that is come NCAA postseason time. So really just gets back to the defense. But, yeah, Big 12 play begins. A good Texas Tech team. Stronger with the bat than the arms and the rotation. You know, Josh Young, they listed him as day-to-day. I think that he's the best college hitter besides Oregon State's catcher in the country. So if he's not able to go, potentially, that would be an enormous blow for Texas Tech. But it sounded like he was just day-to-day. I think he's going to play. But, yeah, Texas starts Big 12 play with the bang against one of the best teams in the league. And they do need to win two out of three this weekend, I think. If they can just navigate this March in Big 12 play and get to, you know, early April, mid-April, the schedule really sets up nicely for them to potentially make a run. But it just really, really gets back to the defense. And as for the basketball team tonight, I really have no idea what to expect. Kansas, I think, this is basically a home game for them in Kansas City in the Sprint Center. I think that they're going to be extra motivated because it's the first time in 14 years Kansas has not won the regular season title. So kind of says, well, you know, they're probably going to want to go prove that, hey, we can win the tournament title and still have a championship in the Big 12 this year. I know Kansas is flawed. You know, they're pretty young for a Kansas team. They basically only play seven guys in the rotation. And Texas has played them well this year, lost by two at Lawrence and then beat them at home later on in the season. But really, I think this Texas team is going to play desperate, but I thought they were going to play desperate against TCU, and they had their worst performance of the season relative to the expectations. So really don't know what to expect tonight, which is kind of the norm for conference tournament basketball.
I've been trying to think of a rant, like just – what can I rant about? And I don't really have one. I don't have the blue bonnet thing actually brought out more of a rant for a parting shot in me than I probably have on anything else. So that seems like a good thing. Like nothing immediately comes to mind in terms of a rant. So Dustin, I want to use my parting shot just to ask you one question. And forgive me if you had this in the most recent episode of Droppin' Dimes. I usually listen to all of your Droppin' Dimes, but I have not yet listened to this one. It's been a busy week so far. Shaka, we've kind of talked about this on Slack in that, you know, if one situation more than another was going to happen, more than him getting fired, in theory, the idea that he could hit the parachute and fly off safely to someone else, if someone else in a hiring position was interested in him, and he, you know, and he were interested in them, and it came, like, in your mind, is there a way to give a percentage of, like, how likely that could possibly be? Because it's the thing that basketball-wise, I feel like there is Virginia Tech and, you know, like any school in Virginia, there's like all of this discussion that's so hopeful that that would be the way to kind of clear the path on this subject matter. Is that really realistic? Is there any buzz at all? When would the buzz start, if it were to start? Like, how are you actually watching the Shaka situation right now in real time?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Thank you.
I don't know if there's a true answer right now, just because, I mean, the season hasn't ended. I think once the season ends, and really with that sort of thing, it also matters too what when other seasons end for other teams as well. In terms of the coaching carousel and things like that, we've written, like, the likelihood of Texas firing Shaka, from everything that we've heard, is, I mean, the buyout is just kind of a non-starter. It's just nobody wants to pay that buyout. But I don't know, just covering him for 4 years, he always has kind of struck me as a happiness over money guy, not to the sense that, hey, I'm just going to kick, you know, $10 million to the curb. But I do think the likelihood of him landing somewhere else as kind of a getaway out of Texas is more likely than him being fired by Texas. But it really just kind of depends on, I think, you know, what happens at the Big 12 tournament, what happens with other jobs across the country, those sorts of things. I think the Texas fans have this idea that nobody would have interest in Shaka Smart, just because, you know, fans that follow one team that's been unsuccessful for four seasons are going to have that kind of view. But the truth is, nationally, he would still have a lot of juice as it relates to certain opportunities. But I just don't know how many of those opportunities are going to open. You know, he's not he turned down UCLA in the past, and I don't even know if UCLA would even look at him right now. Like, there's just I just don't see a lot of jobs opening. But, you know, you mentioned the Virginia area. Everybody thinks that Buzz Williams is going to go to Texas A&M. Everybody thinks it. I mean, he was even asked about it recently at a press conference, and kind of gave a non-denial type of answer. He's got Texas roots. He was assistant there, so on and so forth. So I don't know if Virginia Tech opens, but that, I mean, that's a football school without much basketball tradition. You know, I know people on the board have posted about Wake Forest. Danny Manning's contract is, you know, he's signed through the 2025 season. Like, I don't know if that's fully guaranteed. Wow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. You guys be good to each other.